Kirby Monsters is a podcast about facing the unknown.
I start to float away from the earth.
Have you ever smoked crack before?
We're all kind of frantically searching for meaning.
They have the neurotransmitters.
I think we're all juggalos in some way.
Yo, we're not broken.
Crazed delinquents.
We're in our last days, young man.
Listen to Here Be Monsters,
the podcast about the unknown,
on the KCRW iTunes page.
From the independent producer project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and personal documentaries, and on this episode, Service Sector, three stories about people who are there for you, at least in theory. It's more stories recorded at Unfictional Live at the Riot LA Comedy Festival last January. We begin with comic Whitmer Thomas, a story about the tension of a delivery driver. Is it just another night of glimpses into the lives of others, or is this the night when you become part of someone else's story? From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
I don't really do a lot of bad things. I feel like bad stuff happens at me a lot. So I was thinking, like, what is a situation that I was in where I was dipping my toe in that a little too deep, you know? And I've kept it a secret for a long time, and this is maybe the first time I've ever told it in a kind of professional way. So I told some friends about it and high-fived a little bit. But anyway, so I deliver groceries, a grocery delivery service that I'm not going to say the name of right now. Everybody here knows it. I did that for a few years. I was a very cool-looking person when I did it. I always wore my backwards green hat and a green coach jacket. And I'd like to think I wasn't a very threatening-looking guy. Delivering groceries for a long time, you kind of learn a lot about the different types of people who get groceries, you know, delivered to their house. Families, during the day, mostly. People who work a lot. And then at night, it gets different. It's a completely different type of person. It becomes a lot of, people trying to get drunk. People trying to stay drunk. People trying to get more drunk. People who are sad and alone. The types of groceries you deliver to these types of people, they change. You know, during the day, it's fruit and it's supplies and things like that for cooking. At night, it's sad stuff, you know. My favorite sad thing I ever delivered was vodka, some cranberry juice, some cigarettes, and a pregnancy test. I started to really learn what types of people I was delivering to, even before I even got to them, you know what I mean? If I was delivering Gatorade and fruit to a person, it either meant that they were working out, like to work out, or are planning on staying up all night and having sex. After a while, I really got good at figuring it out, but there's this one place that I would go to all the time, you know, 2-3 nights a week. At about midnight, she would call and we would close at midnight. So it was a little bit frustrating, but I sort of started to like it a lot. It was a woman who I'll call Cherry, because that's just a cool name that I feel like girls aren't named that enough, and I think it's a cool name. So her name was Cherry. She's a woman, a middle-aged woman. She had a very Pamela Anderson-style vibe. You know, I feel like maybe she was a swimsuit model when Pamela Anderson was at her kind of peak in fame. And so she had, like, a lot of those attributes. So Cherry, I would deliver a salad and vodka to her 3 nights a week, usually, about midnight. And I would get there, and every time, she was always very sweet to me. She lived in Santa Monica, right on the beach, in this street that I will call Ocean Street. So I would go to her every single night. Every single night I would get there. I would walk up the stairs and my heart would start to flutter. I would like start to look forward to seeing Cherry, to see what she was up to, you know? Because usually I would just give her salad and her vodka and she'd say thank you. But more and more I'd get to her and she'd start to look at me and stare at me and sort of say like sweet things to me. Like one time she said, why are you a delivery boy? And I was like, I don't know. Why are you getting groceries delivered to you in the middle of the night? She'd start to say things like that, kind of like flirting it, you know, in a little bit of a way. Just like sweet things, you know, endearing things. And one night I go there and she's wearing like a kimono. You know, she's like, hi, you know, hi. And I'm like, hi, hello. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you look great. So here's your groceries. Goodbye. Have a good night. Next couple nights I go to her and she's wearing that same kimono, but it's totally open. And she's just leaning on her place in, on the doorway in Ocean Street down in Santa Monica. Cherry is. And I can see just like almost everything that there is to see. And I was just polite and I tried to look her in the eye and I was like, here's your vodka and salad. Have a good rest of your night. And then third night I go to her and I'm like, tonight something's gonna happen. I'm gonna go to her tonight and something is going to happen and I think it's out of my control. So I go there, it's a foggy night in Santa Monica, driving down Ocean Street, I park my car and I can feel it in my being. It's like, tonight is, it's like a movie from the 80s, you know what I mean? I walk up the steps where she's usually already standing once I get up there and she's not there. And so I knock a little bit on the wall and I just hear her voice. She goes, go ahead and come in if you could. I've never been invited in. She goes, I gotta find you cash. Just go ahead, take a seat on the couch. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay, so I go, I sit down on the couch. And as soon as I sit down from a pillow, you know, on the sofa, like I rumbled up the flatness of the sofa. From underneath a pillow, a large vibrator just comes and rolls and hits me in the leg. A big one, old school. And I was like, what? Do I touch this? What if she walks in and I'm just like, holding it. She walks in and it's, I've just left it sitting next to my leg. Haven't touched it. I'm basically just like, uh-uh. No, no. And she goes, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I've just been really frustrated lately. And I was like, okay, thinking, you know, I should back out. And then I was like, no, I shouldn't. I should go with this. So it's like, frustrated, huh? I get frustrated too sometimes. And she goes, do you now? And I was like, yes, ma'am. I do. And she goes, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Alabama. She goes, what you doing all the way out here? And I was like, I just, you know, trying to make it in Hollywood, I guess. And she goes, why don't you stand up? And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. I've gotten too comfortable. She goes, no, don't go away. And she sits down, she takes off my pants and just starts, you know, I'm standing and she's sitting, so that, doing that, you know? And she goes, wait, I can't do this. And you're like, oh my God, you're totally right. This is inappropriate. You're gonna tip me after with this. That means I'm a prostitute. Like, this is weird. And so I leave, and then she has my phone number because I always have to call her at the front of the gate, and she texts me, please come back after work. And I go, okay, cool, I'm gonna do it. So I go, and I go right after work, I go park my car and wait for her. And I text her, did you still want me to come up? I park my car like on her street, you know? And she's like, never responds. She never responds to me. So I go to my only friend I had in Santa Monica, and I'm like, can I sleep on your couch tonight? He's like, why? And I was like, I'll probably leave in the middle of the night. And so it's about 3 a.m., I get a text. Oh, please come over. It's like, yeah, I'll definitely come over right now. I drove over, and that feeling's all going out throughout my body, you know, and I walk up the stairs of her place on Ocean Street. And I expect Cherry to be standing there naked, just kind of like, here I am, take me. But instead, she was in her kimono, wrapped up on the balcony, looking through a telescope on the beach in Santa Monica. And I went up to her and I was like, hey, I'm here. And she's like, hey, come out here. And I went out there, and she sat there, and she just taught me about the stars for a whole night. You know, for the first 10 minutes, I was like, okay, well, what are we getting into here? And she's like, you know, clearly she wanted to teach me about the stars. And eventually the feeling kind of just went away, that like sexual feeling, you know, and she's like, I wanted you to come back because I just feel comfortable with you. And I don't know what you thought you were getting into, but I'm sure I misled you. And, I have tendencies, you know, and I've made mistakes. And the street, do you deliver on the street a lot, Ocean Street? And I was like, yeah, I deliver all the time. She's like, what types of people live on this street? And I was like, just really beautiful middle-aged women. A lot of them, I mean, you're probably the prettiest. And she's like, do you know what this street is? And I was like, no. And she said, this street is called Call Girl Alley. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, this is all the high-class call girls in Los Angeles. We all own houses on this street, and we're kind of run by this huge pimp, and all these businessmen come every week, and, you know, we have sex with them. I'm not a real masseuse. That massage table is not for massaging. And I was like, oh, okay. And she goes, so if you don't mind that, I think it'd be fun just to kind of lay with you all night. And I was like, sure, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. So we just laid next to each other all night. And then the next morning, I just kind of snuck out of there before she woke up, and I left. And I thought that was the end of it. But then about 6 months ago, she texted me and said she got a boat and invited me to go on a ride with her. So we'll see, you know. All right, thank y'all.
Whitmer Thomas is a Los Angeles-based comedian and skateboarder by way of Gulf Shores, Alabama. I'm Bob Carlson, and you're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. On this episode, Service Sector, three stories recorded at Unfictional Live at the Riot LA Comedy Festival. Next, Jessica Lee Williamson wants to help her fellow man, but only if there's something in it for her. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
Let me start by saying that it happened during a low point in my life. I had put on some weight because I had been spending a lot of time on my couch. My boyfriend and I were on the brink of breaking up. Also, I was starting to feel uncomfortable telling people that I was a writer because I was at that point in my writing career where I had never actually written anything. All of which made the idea of going out into the world and hearing the question, so what do you do, sounded very difficult to me. Needless to say, I was pretty desperate, so I did what a lot of people do when they find themselves feeling inadequate and in need of something to brag about. I decided to volunteer. I have always wanted to be a good person. It's just not something that comes naturally to me. So I'm just gonna be very honest and tell you guys that 90% of the good deeds I've done in my life have been based on a need for validation. When I was in college, I dressed up like a chili pepper for cystic fibrosis to impress a guy. I volunteered for a food bank to put it on my resume. I picked up litter on the side of the road because it was court ordered, but I like to think that the embarrassment of a disorderly conduct charge would have been enough to send me out to do it on my own. And, you know, I've never understood how people can say, oh, I got so much more than I gave, or who saved who, as if it's some big surprise. Like, that's why you signed up for it in the first place, to feel like you matter. So in this particular downswing, I had my mind set on volunteering at an animal shelter of some sort. and I had looked around, but a lot of them require you to do an interview, an orientation meeting. There's like a minimum hours of commitment, probably to weed out people like myself. And I finally found a place. It was this guy running a dog rescue out of a house in West Hollywood, and his only requirement was that you had a phone or an email address. And so he called me and he said, "We know a woman who has cancer and she needs help walking her dog." And there was a part of me that just thought, yes, of course, I want to help. But there was another part of me that was like, cancer. That is like twice the credit for half the work. And I hadn't even hung up the phone with the guy where, like, I already went deep down in my imagination where, like, this dog was excited to see me. I took it to the dog park. We played. People would see the dog and say, "Hey, where did you get that dog?" And then I would have to humbly reply, "Well, I'm helping this woman who has cancer." I can assure you that in my imagination, it was a very sweet and genuine exchange. The day finally comes where I have to go and walk this woman's dog. And I'm not gonna lie, I felt pretty excited because it's not every day that you get the opportunity to be the person who is going to change another person's life. So I was trying on outfits, printing up directions to her house. I made a walk the dog playlist on my iPod, reflective but still upbeat. And usually when I wake up and I think, what can I do to make the world a better place? I end up getting distracted by other questions like, what kind of sandwich should I eat for lunch today? Or why is my dog so cute? But on this occasion, the exact opposite happened. I had been so caught up in everything that I was already halfway to her house by the time I realized, wait a minute, I forgot to eat my lunch. And I'm hypoglycemic, you guys. For a lot of people, that is just a medical term that means grouchy when I haven't eaten. But for me, hypoglycemia is a quick downward spiral into a hysteria that is only acceptable in small children and 911 phone calls. Is it cancer? No, it is not. Not even close, but it was very hard for me to remember that when I was knocking on her front door. What happened next was a whirlwind. There were a lot of tears on my part. I said something like, "I don't feel well." And then I remember leaning on her frail body while she led me through the door. Then I spent the next 2.5 hours laying in her bed while she brought me Advil and an ice pack and a variety of organic snacks. Basically, the only thing I succeeded at was literally making a woman's cancer all about me. I don't know if any of you have ever had yogurt spoon-fed to you by a dying woman. But it's kind of like having humility spoon-fed to you by a dying woman. And when I went home that day, I got a call from the man at the animal rescue saying that they would no longer need my help, that they found a much more capable volunteer. So I will never be able to tell people I helped a woman who has cancer. But what I can say is I got so much more than I gave you guys who saved two. Thank you.
Jessica Lee Williamson is a writer, storyteller, and performer, and a regular unfictional contributor. I'm Bob Carlson, and you're listening to Unfictional on KCRW.com. On this episode, Service Sector, three stories recorded at Unfictional Live. Finally, it's Dave Ross, who lives with the internal torment of the well-meaning white guy. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional.
Let's tell a story about how I'm racist. Okay. Or not, we'll see. I'm a Lyft driver, because I'm crushing it. Also, just from us Lyft drivers to you, sorry for the talking. So I drive Lyft, and one fateful day, I got a ride to LAX, which is great, because that's a lot of money. The problem with getting a ride like that is then you're at LAX now, and you can't get rides in LAX, so your only recourse is to just leave and go home and drive. And the way the Lyft app works is you have the Lyft app on, and while it's on, if people call rides in your proximity, it sends you to go get them. You go. I contemplated turning the app off on the drive because I live in Echo Park, and the way you get there is 105 East, 110 North. And those of you who live in LA know that that takes you through all of the bad neighborhoods in LA in all of history. Like Inglewood, Compton, Watts. If you haven't heard of them, just listen to rap. Just like all of it. So I'm driving through, and my first thought is turn the app off. You don't want to get a ride. You don't want to just get called, and then you have to go into one of these neighborhoods that's like full of crime. Everyone's constantly shooting each other, and they just called you because they want to jack some white kid. And then immediately after that, I'm like, why does it have to be white kid, Dave? What is this? Are you being racist right now? Are you really, in your white liberal mind, this guy who thinks he wants to save the entire world and always has thought that? Are you really saying no to an entire sector of the population just because they're poor and in some crime-ridden neighborhood? They obviously need rides too. Leave the app on. And so I left the app on, and I got a call that sent me into the middle of Watts. It was the Slauson exit off the 110, I believe. And I am arguing with myself because I'm panicking because I think the worst is going to happen in this bad neighborhood I've never been in. But then also I have this other voice that's like, just because someone has a worse situation than you doesn't mean you shouldn't be in that situation with them too. So I'm yelling at myself in my own head, driving, and the neighborhood just gets worse and worse as I'm driving. And it's just like broken fence, exploded fence, yelling fence. This fence is yelling. I drove by a fist fight. It was just crazy, like left, right, and I end up in front of the house where I'm picking this guy up, and he takes forever to come out. And now I'm in like just a full-blown grudge match with myself between true fear and white guilt. They are just really duking it out, you know? My true fear is like, leave, and my white guilt is like, oh, why you? I'm sitting there long enough for people to start poking their heads out of houses and looking at me. And I'm like, they're looking at me because every time a car comes up here, it's always a drive-by. And then I'm like, why did you think that, you piece of shit, you know? Then, I've been there about 10 minutes. I look down at the phone, and it tells you who it is. And the guy's name that I'm picking up is LaRon. And now I truly explode with fear because my drug dealer in college at USC, his name was Elron, but he was the boss drug dealer. He was my drug dealer's boss, let's say it that way. And I met him because he just showed up in my dorm room one day and then ended up crashing there for 2 months because he was giving us free meth. You're learning a lot about me right now. Yeah, he stayed like literally in a dorm room at USC, Trojan Hall, this dude. And he was like 45 years old, 6'6", 400 pounds, black guy, who just looked like anger. You know what I mean? He stayed there. Eventually, finals came up. We asked him nicely to leave. He gave us some weed to thank us for letting him stay there. The next morning, he was arrested in the lobby of our dorm with 45 ecstasy pills and a really, really, really long knife. After that, we found out the reason he was staying with us was because that he beat a woman to death at the house he lived in. Yeah. Then, my next and last interaction with him was trying to get weed my sophomore year of college, and a friend of mine was like, well, I have L. Ron's number. So we called him, and on the phone, he gave me directions to a dumpster in Watts behind a Burger King, and he was like, yeah, man, just meet me behind this dumpster, behind this Burger King, and, you know, that's totally normal. And I was like, oh, yeah, totally, man, got it. I hung up the phone, and my girlfriend was like, don't go! So my last experience with L. Ron is blowing him off. So I'm now in a place that I am horrified of, but am forcing myself to be in because I think I have to. But now I'm thinking, oh, great, this is going to be a guy who comes out and straight up kills me because he remembers that 12 years ago I left him behind a dumpster for 3 hours. Sure enough, the guy comes out, and he could not be a more regular dude. He comes out, gets in the car, he's like, hey man, sorry it took so long. I was running the tub for my mom. I was like, oh God. I am just trash, man. And this argument is happening louder than ever in my head, except now both voices are like, well, you're just full on garbage. You are just trash. And a few minutes go by and I'm like, I'm a racist, classist asshole, man, that I could possibly judge the people in this neighborhood based on just what I've heard in songs? Who am I? Who am I? And so I'm like, I'm gonna relate to this guy. I'm gonna be a person. And I turn to him and I was like, hey man, how do you like living here? And he goes, are you kidding me? It's a nightmare, man. Everything's bad. I take Lyft because when you get on the bus, everyone's shooting. When you walk to the store, everyone's shooting. I always am getting robbed. I don't even like leaving my house. What my friends and I do is that we pick a house and we play video games there all night. And we just hang out and we try to forget about it, you know? And that's where I'm going right now. And I was like, okay. I get it. I guess I don't really want to be here either. And he was like, yeah, I can't believe you came. We like pulled up in front of the house. And we had this moment where we kind of looked at each other. And he was like, I think waiting for me to say something dumb, I think is really what was happening. Because he knew I was clearly, you know, afraid and coming from this place of like, what do I do, you know? And he was like, hey man, thanks for the ride. And I was like, yeah, have a good night, man. I was like, and he was like, don't worry about it, man. There's nothing you can do. And I was like, I hope you, I don't know, get out of here, you know? And he was like, thank you. And he got out of the car and he walked into his house. And I sat there for probably 15 minutes by myself, wondering who I even am. And then I shut the app off. Thank you.
Dave Ross is a stand-up comedian, storyteller, and Lyft driver living in Los Angeles. All of these stories were recorded at the 2016 Riot LA Comedy Festival at the historic Regent Theater in downtown Los Angeles. Thanks to Riot LA, the KCRW event staff, and DJ Dan Wilcox. The stories were recorded by Alex Fender. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. You can podcast the show on iTunes or however you like to hear podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Unfictional or like us on Facebook. And I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional on KCRW.com.